Tonight we're going to talk about the second factor in the Eightfold Path, which is right resolve.
Hoje à noite vamos falar do segundo fator do Nobre Caminho Octuplo, que é a resolução correta.
As I said last night, the first two factors are the discernment factors of the path.
Como dissemos ontem, esses dois últimos fatores, eles fazem parte do fator do discernimento.
Of the two factors, right view is the head factor.
De todos esses fatores, a perspectiva correta é o fator da cabeça, o fator que mais analítico.
Dealing with your understanding.
Que lida com o seu entendimento.
Whereas right resolve is the heart factor.
Já a resolução correta é o lado do coração.
Dealing with your desire for true happiness.
Que lida com o seu desejo pela felicidade verdadeira.
Right resolve builds on right view.
A resolução correta, ela se constrói no topo da perspectiva correta.
In the sense it realizes that suffering comes from your actions.
Quando você percebe que que o sofrimento vem das suas ações.
And so to avoid suffering, you have to learn to be very careful about how you act.
Então, para que você previna o sofrimento, você tem que ter muito cuidado a maneira com que você age.
Like right view, there's right resolve has different levels. There's mundane right resolve, and then there's noble right resolve.
Assim como a perspectiva correta, existe a resolução correta que é nobre e a mundana.
Okay. The mundane right resolve comes in three ways. There's resolve for renunciation. Right resolve is basically promise you make to yourself about the types of intentions you will act on and the type of actions you will engage in. In mundane right resolve, there are three. There's a resolve for renunciation. In other words, you're renouncing, want to renounce your desire to stick with sensuality. Resolve for non-ill will. In other words, resolve for goodwill. And resolve for harmlessness, which is the same as resolve for compassion. Now you see that by acting on the desire for sensuality, you can do many, many unskillful things. That's why you want to resolve on renunciation, resolving on non-ill will. If you have ill will for other people, it's going to be very easy to do unskillful things with regard to those people. So for your own protection as well as for theirs, you have to develop thoughts of goodwill. And the same with thoughts of harmlessness. You realize that your actions, that whatever state of becoming you might want to attain, involves harming other people, you have to realize I have to avoid taking on those different states of becoming. Each of these three right resolves is related to a type of meditation. For example, renunciation is related to body contemplation. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Body contemplation is when you realize that you can do many stupid things and harmful things under the power of lust, and so you need some ways to counteract what lust you may have. You can also do many stupid things based on the pride in your body. In America, there's a big problem with racism, with white people thinking their bodies are better than the bodies of people of color, which is definitely not the case. If you take the bodies apart, they all have the same parts, and basically there's nothing much there. Some people complain about body contemplation as teaching a negative body image, but it's actually teaching you a healthy negative body image. An unhealthy negative body image is when you feel that your body is ugly and other people have beautiful bodies. A healthy negative image is when you realize that everybody's bodies are basically the same stuff. If you took out livers, all the livers we have in this room here right now, and put them on the floor, we wouldn't be able to have a contest as to who has the prettiest liver. We're all pretty much equal in that way. This helps to equalize things. Similarly, it is possible to have an unhealthy positive image of the body and a healthy positive image of the body. An unhealthy positive image is when you think that because you're beautiful and attractive, you can get away with all kinds of things that ugly people cannot do, or that you're a better person because you're more beautiful. A healthy positive image is realizing that even though the body may not be attractive, still there are many good things you can do with the body. You can practice generosity, you can practice virtue, you can practice meditation. All the good things in life, many of them really depend on your body. So your body is useful. The Buddha is not totally negative on the body, but he's simply trying to point out that if you are attracted to the body for its good looks, you're going to get into trouble. So there is the meditation on the topic of body contemplation, which is basically an understanding, why is it that we perceive the body as beautiful, even though there are many aspects of the body that are not? Why do we turn a blind eye to the unattractive aspects so easily? And how is it so you can so quickly switch from seeing the negative side of the body back to the positive side again? What is it that motivates those perceptions? So body contemplation goes deeper than just looking at the body, but also looks into the mind, the way the mind creates perceptions around things and its motivations for applying perceptions. The practice of non-ill will and the practice and the practice of harmlessness relate to what are called the practice of the Brahma-viharas. These are called sublime attitudes, which you're trying to develop an attitude of infinite goodwill, infinite compassion, infinite empathetic joy, and infinite equanimity. Goodwill is a desire for happiness. Compassion is what goodwill feels when you see that people are suffering or creating the causes for suffering. You feel sorry for them, you want to help them in any way you can. Empathetic joy is what goodwill feels when it sees that people are already happy or are creating the causes for happiness. You're happy for them. You're not jealous. You're not resentful. And finally, equanimity is realizing that there are certain things in the world that you cannot change. And you have to accept that. No matter how much you want to help someone, there are some people at the moment may be beyond help. If you waste your time and energy getting upset about the fact that you can't help them, that wastes the energy that you could use to be of help in other areas. So each of these four types of resolves are not only an intention that you create, but also there are ways that you can meditate in order to further these intentions through the contemplation of the body, developing goodwill, and developing compassion as infinite attitudes, i.e., extend them to all beings, even people you don't like. So that's mundane right resolve. Noble right resolve is actually the first level of right concentration, which by definition is free from sensuality, free from unskillful qualities, and settles down with a sense of ease and well-being. There are different ways that mundane right resolve can lead to transcendent right resolve. One is simply through practicing the Brahma-viharas. It is possible for the mind to get to a strong state of concentration. Similarly, with contemplation of the body, there are some people who find that contemplating the body brings the mind to a lot of peace. The Buddha gave an account in his own experience, saying that he started out with right resolve. In fact, that seems to be the first factor of the path that he developed, right resolve, dividing his thoughts into two types, the thoughts that were imbued with sensuality, ill will, harmfulness on the one hand, and the thoughts that were imbued with renunciation, non-ill will, and harmlessness on the other side. He said if there were the thoughts that were on the first side, on the unskillful side, that it led to his own affliction, it would lead to the affliction of others. He gave an analogy. It was like a cowherd during the rainy season. Now in Asia, in the rainy season, that's when rice is growing, and you have to be very careful that you don't let the cows into the rice fields. Otherwise, they eat the rice and there are going to be problems. So you have to keep beating and checking the cows to make sure they stay out of the rice. In the same way, if he noticed that his thoughts were going in an unskillful direction, he would beat the thoughts down. In other words, he would do everything he could to stop that kind of thinking. On the other hand, if he thought that, found that his thoughts were imbued with renunciation, non-ill will, and harmlessness, he said it was like a cowherd during the hot season. And during the hot season, that's actually the dry season in Asia. The rice has been already harvested. There's no danger that the cows are going to wander into anybody's rice fields. And so the cowherd can just sit under a tree and just keep conscious of the fact of where his cows are, but he doesn't have to keep too much control over them. In the same way the Buddha saw that his skillful thoughts, he could allow them to range as much as they wanted, it would cause no harm. However, he said he did notice that he could think for a day and a night in skillful ways, and it would tire the mind. So to keep the mind from being tired, he would then bring the mind into right concentration. So in either way, either by developing the Brahma-viharas or developing body contemplation, you can get the mind into noble right resolve, or by simply realizing that sitting around thinking, even though your thoughts may be skillful, can be tiresome, so you want to give the mind some rest. And that's what brings the mind into right concentration, i.e. the noble right resolve. Now, as we said earlier, right view is what informs the different factors of the path. And it's interesting to look at, or it's useful to look at, the different ways in which right view helps give guidance to your right resolve. To begin with, in terms of renunciation, you have to remember the Buddha didn't say that all sensual pleasures are bad. Right view points out the fact that you look at pleasures not so much as what they are in and of themselves, but what kind of activities you have to do in order to gain them, and then what kind of effect they have on the mind. So when you're looking at pleasures and looking at pains in your life, right view tells you to, especially sensual pleasures, right view tells you to look at what are the karmic consequences of pursuing those particular pleasures. If there is no harm being done, then the pleasure is perfectly okay. And this is a lesson you get from right view. Similarly, with the practice of goodwill and compassion, you have to learn how to understand these mind states in line with the principles of karma. In other words, that they are determinations. They're fabricated states. That they're not natural to the mind. They're not any more natural than ill will and harmfulness. As the Buddha said, the mind is capable of just about anything. It has infinite possibilities, and it can change very quickly. So you can't say that the mind is innately good or has an innate sense of goodwill, which means that you have to develop goodwill as a fabrication. Remember, you develop three kinds of fabrication. Bodily fabrication, you think about when you're trying to develop goodwill, look at the way you're breathing right now. Is the breathing calming? Is it soothing? Is it comfortable? That'll make it a lot easier to feel goodwill for others. And then look at the way you're talking to yourself about the other people that you're trying to extend goodwill to. And look at the perceptions that you have about them. Try to develop verbal fabrication and mental fabrications that actually assist in developing that attitude of goodwill. The teaching on karma also teaches you important lessons about what it actually means to have wish for happiness. In other words, we're not saying simply by the force of my wish may all beings be happy. You're basically saying I would like to see that all beings would understand the causes for happiness and be able to act on them, because if they're going to be happy, it has to come from their actions. Now, given the complexity of karma, remember, you can't see all of a person's past karma right now. Sometimes we think that what we're looking at a person, what you see right now is their running balance in their karma account, in the same way that you would see a running balance in a bank account. But that's not the case. We all have many different seeds in our past, good and bad, in our field. Which means that if we have goodwill for someone, even though they may be suffering right now, that doesn't mean they don't have the potential to be helped. That potential may be there, and so in wishing goodwill for them, you're actually hoping that whatever good karma they have in the past will sprout and be able to improve that person's situation. There's always the possibility that the suffering person can be helped. That's an important thing to realize, to remember as we're motivating ourselves to spread goodwill. Similarly, the teachings on karma teach us about the motivation for why we're doing this. We don't do this for other beings because they deserve, quote-unquote, our goodwill. We don't believe that we're all one together, or we don't believe that everybody is innately good or has innate good nature. We're doing this because we need to protect ourselves by being very careful about our actions. When you're dealing with people, you want to interact with them in a way that doesn't do anything unskillful. So to protect yourself from acting in an unskillful way, you have to develop these attitudes so you can trust yourself in all situations. Finally, looking at the Brahmaviharas in terms of karma, it reminds us that these are not prayers. We're not asking some outside power to make other beings happy or to end their suffering. We're basically setting our motivation. The Buddha talks about goodwill as a kind of mindfulness, something you keep in mind, and also as a determination, something that you make up your mind that you're going to follow through. It depends on the force of your will and your intention. And then based on that intention, then you try to act in line with that intention, and that's how the Brahma Viharas actually can bring help into the world. As the Buddha said, if prayer on its own really worked, who in the world would be poor, ugly, or die young? So these are not prayers, they're determinations that you're making that you then hope to act on. So in these ways, by seeing the practice of the Brahma Viharas in the context of karma, helps you to understand what it means to develop an attitude of goodwill, what the goodwill means, why you're doing it, and the potential that this has, that it actually could help other people in the world. Now, it's not only the case that right resolve learns lessons from right view. Right resolve has some lessons to teach right view. As you actually practice right resolve, you learn a lot of important things about the functioning of the mind, and that gives more subtlety and depth to your right view. For instance, when you move from mundane to noble right resolve, you learn to appreciate the value of the stillness of the mind, the need for the happiness of jhana, a right concentration for the mind to go beyond sensuality and ill will. Otherwise, it's going to keep trying to go back and find pleasure in sensuality or ill will. So it needs a good firm state of concentration to compensate for giving these things up. So you learn to appreciate the value of stillness and the sense of pleasure that can come from the mind actually settling down. And the contemplations that you engage in as you try to go beyond both sensuality and ill will teach you a lot about the power of perception, what the perceptions do to the mind, why the mind goes for certain perceptions. For example, with the contemplation of the body, you begin to see how arbitrary your perceptions can be. You can look at one body, the same body, and from one second to another go from seeing it from being attractive to unattractive, and you begin to realize how much that perception has power over what you're going to do. Similarly, when you're practicing the Brahma Viharas, you find that there's some people, all you can think about are their bad qualities or the horrible things they've done. It's going to be very difficult to feel goodwill for them. You have to find some way in which you can see that the person has some goodness to them. If there's no goodness at all, then the Buddha says you have to perceive them as if they were a person going across a desert, sick, thirsty, and has no one to help them. In other words, a person is just creating a lot of bad karma. You have to have compassion for them because they're just making life worse and worse for themselves. The Buddha also says, think of your own need for goodwill. You're the person who needs the goodwill or your development of your own goodwill. The Buddha says it's like you yourself are coming across a desert. You're tired and thirsty. You come across a small puddle of water in a cow's footprint. And you realize that if you tried to scoop the water up with your hand, you would make it muddy. So you have to bend down on all hand on your knees and your elbows and slurp the water up. Now, you wouldn't want someone to come and take a photograph of you in that posture. It seems very undignified. But you realize this is what you really need. In the same way, you may feel that it's beneath your dignity to feel goodwill for someone who's been behaving in a horrible way. But you're the one who needs your goodwill. Remind yourself of that. So put up with the indignity. Also, the Buddha gives a perception of if people have been saying nasty things about you, he says to remind yourself that even if someone were to pin you down, you have bandits pinning you down, your arms and your legs so you can't move, and they're going to cut off your arms and legs with a saw. He said even in a case like that, if you had ill will for those bandits, you would not be following the Buddha's teachings. So when you keep that image in mind, then when someone says something nasty to you, you realize, okay, at least they're not cutting off my arms and legs. I can stand this. There's a story in the canon of a monk who was going to a wild part of India. And he went to take leave of the Buddha. And the Buddha said, you know, the people there are very harsh and very savage. What are you going to do if they yell at you? He said, and the monk says, I'm going to tell myself these are very good people. They're not hitting me. What if they hit you? He said, these are very good people, they're not hitting me with stones. What if they hit you with stones? These are very good people, they're not stabbing me with a knife. What if they stab you with a knife? So these are very good people, they're not killing me. What if they kill you? The monk says, I'll tell myself, well, at least my death was not a suicide. So you can see the power of perception as to what you can stand and not stand and what you're capable of doing. So these are some of the lessons that we learn from right resolve that we can then apply to deepen our own right view. Finally, in the practice of developing goodwill and compassion, you begin to appreciate the need for equanimity. As we've said several times today, you begin to realize there's some cases where there are people you cannot help. And you need to have equanimity to deal with that so you don't waste your energy on those people, energy that can be used for helping other people that you can. Also, this is an issue of priorities. You begin to realize that there are many issues in the world that require help. And if you try to help in all those cases, your energy would be dissipated and wasted. So you have to focus your energies on areas that you think are especially important, and then those other areas you have to let go. Areas aside from that. One of the questions we had today that we didn't have time to answer was the question of, you know, as a person who's practicing the Dharma, do you have to totally disregard what's going on in the world and just practice your own private practice? And that's not the case. After all, the Buddha did teach generosity. And one of the ways of being generous is giving of your time for causes that you feel are actually helpful in the world. The only condition there, as the Buddha said, if you see that the quality of your mind is beginning to deteriorate as you're helping other people, then you have to stop. You realize you do not have the strength to continue with that. You have to maintain your own strength. Otherwise, if you lose your strength, then all of your practice will be ruined. So you have to have equanimity in areas where you realize that your priorities tell you that you have to focus your attention on certain things, and you cannot let other things get in the way of the things that are really important to you. So these are some of the lessons that you learn from practicing goodwill, that you need equanimity in order to protect your goodwill. And all of these are lessons, the power of perception, the power of the need for the mind to get into concentration, and the need to order your priorities. These are all lessons that right resolve then teaches back to right view, so that your right view gets deeper and more effective.